honored by the King of Norway, who gave her the Norwegian War Medal. But there is perhaps no greater honor than to be recognized by a generation that follows your path.
Hi, this is Mark DeClive Lowe, and you're listening to WGXC Acre 90.7 FM.
On Monday, August 8th, tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the air at 90.7 FM, WGXC, including at 10 a.m. you can hop on the Afrosonic Taxi. This week, listening in with Mayua Sykes, Muri Sangria, and Nedia Gangora, among others. Then Brandon Donegan is playing favorites with some of his favorite reggae songs at 11 a.m. live from the WGXC Hudson studio in the basement of the First Presbyterian Church on Warren Street. At noon, after the local news, it's time for the Deep Three show with music this week from Marlena Shaw, Gabriella Montero, and the Kronos Quartet, among others. Vital Weekly program at 2 p.m. has brand new music from around the world featured. This week, here are new tracks from Heather Frosch, Katie Porter, and Alessandro Gobibi. At 4 p.m., we are live from Western Massachusetts with Kieran Riley and the WGXC Afternoon Show on 90.7 FM, WGXC. American jazz legend Joe Morris is coming to Opus 40 Sunday, August 28th, performing there in Saugerties from 3 to 5 p.m. Brandon Lopez also on the bill. Joe Morris is a renowned American jazz guitarist based in New York City. This is a rare chance for local audience to see him Sunday, August 28th at Opus 40 in Saugerties from 3 to 5 p.m. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org, where you can add your own events to have them read on the radio by pressing the Add an Event button, wgxc.org, in the community calendar.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at wgxc.org/donate. And do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org/donate now.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Tunstall Studio Publishing of Craryville, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC News Update. Go to the WGXC Newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories. Andrea Macko reports for Porcupine Soup that the Columbia Green Community College Board of Trustees has submitted to the legislative bodies of Columbia and Greene counties for approval a $19,128,307 proposed operating budget for the 2022-2023 fiscal year. The spending plan reflects a 10% increase in overall spending and an increase in tuition from $2,484 to $2,556 per semester for state residents enrolled as full-time students. Maureen Sager, Columbia Green's Director of Marketing and Communication, said the college, quote, has worked hard to keep education within reach of every student. The increase this year, 2.9%, is indeed lower than the current rate of inflation. We are thankful that we can continue to offer affordable tuition to Green and Columbia County residents, unquote. The two-year college is supported by tuition, state aid, support from both Green and Columbia counties, and this year, just under $1.5 million from the Higher Education Emergency Relief Fund, part of the federal CARES Act. The college is forecasting a decline in student enrollment, which will result in a 5% decrease in tuition and fees. Green and Columbia counties are expected to contribute a combined $6.45 million. Green County will pay $2.9 million, $206,333 less than last year, while Columbia County's share is $206,333 more for a total of $3.5 million, Sager said. Quote, we've got more students from Columbia County this year, so their percentage is higher and Greene County is lower. Overall, our county contributions are the same as last year, unquote. The full Greene County legislature will vote on the proposal following a public hearing August 17th. College officials said Columbia County is on board with the plan. Read more about this story at porcupinesoup.com. Ted Remsnyder reports for Columbia Green Media that Cairo town officials are looking to extricate the town from an agreement it entered into last summer to purchase 3 acres of land on William Dinger Road. During a meeting of the Cairo Town Board last week, property owners Janet Jorlamillen and Carol Jones spoke out expressing their dissatisfaction with the current state of affairs, which requires the sisters to pay property taxes on the parcel while the sale is pending. In August 2021, the town board voted to give then-Supervisor John Coyne the authority to sign a contract for $70,000 to acquire the property, which is located near Route 32 in McDonald's. After taking office in January, Watts, who voted to approve the land deal when he was a board member, said the town did not have the funds to complete the purchase. Quote, it's been approved, but where are we supposed to get the money for it, unquote, Watts asked during the August 1st board meeting. Quote, it was never put in the 2022 budget, unquote. Watts indicated the town was now going to attempt to void the commitment. Watts would now like to see the right-of-way to the land given to the current owners and the land returned to them to sell to another party. No vehicle access into the vacant land exists, a situation the sisters want rectified. Quote, I think something commercial could go in there, but it has to be opened up at least, unquote, Jones said. Watts said he also wants to see the property turned into a commercial development. Watts said he hopes to have more information about the property at the board's August 17th workshop meeting. Quote, we'll know more by then, unquote, he said after the meeting. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. And Melanie Lekasevic is reporting for Capital Region Independent Media that longtime Queemans Town historian Harry Sturgis has resigned from the post, and his colleague, Joseph Bokel, has been named as his successor. At the July 28th meeting of the Queemans Town Board, Town Supervisor George McHugh read a resolution accepting Sturgis' resignation. Quote, the town of Queemans sincerely thanks Harry Sturgis for his service and dedication to the town of Queemans and its residents for the last 65 years, unquote, McHugh said. Sturgis also compiles a weekly column, quote, News from the Past, unquote, for the Ravenna News Herald. In a second resolution, Joseph Bokel was appointed the new town historian. Bokel has been a member of the Ravenna Queemans Historical Society since 1999, a curator since 2009, and president of the Ravenna Queemans Historical Society since 2015. His appointment is effective through December 31st. Read more about this story at theupstater.com. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom, wgxc.org.
The U.S. military burn pits other victims, Iraqi and Afghan civilians. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. Military veterans and their supporters camped out in front of the U.S. Capitol for close to a week after Republican senators withdrew their support for a major expansion of health care for veterans exposed to toxic burn pits in Iraq and Afghanistan. Formerly titled the Sergeant First Class Heath Robinson, Honoring Our Promise to Address Comprehensive Toxics Act of 2022, the PACT Act targets the Pentagon's reliance on burn pits for disposing of the vast amounts of waste produced during the invasions and occupations of Iraq and Afghanistan. Plumes of polluted smoke and particulates from the burn pits injured up to an estimated 3.5 million U.S. service members over the past two decades. After blocking the bill, Senate Republicans faced withering criticism from veterans and their supporters, including the renowned comedian Jon Stewart.
I'm not sure I've ever seen a situation where people who have already given so much had to fight so hard to get so little.
Said Jon Stewart, deadly serious, flanked by vets and families of veterans who died from the exposure. Earlier, Jon Stewart assailed the Republicans.
Ain't this a bitch? America's heroes who fought in our wars, outside sweating their asses off with oxygen, battling all kinds of ailments, while these mother sit in the air conditioning, walled off from any of it. They don't have to hear it. They don't have to see it.
Jon Stewart wept after the Senate finally passed the bill. Burn pits were used to dispose of everything from trash, tires, paint and other volatile organic solvents, batteries, unexploded ordnance, petroleum products, plastics, and medical waste, including body parts. These constantly burning dumps were often sited adjacent to barracks. Little or no protective gear was provided for impacted soldiers.
Burn pits are massive incineration fields, sometimes as big as football fields, but of course there were many smaller ones throughout Iraq and Afghanistan as well.
That's Purdue University anthropology professor Kali Rabai on the Democracy Now! NewsHour. The Department of Veterans Affairs has identified a slew of cancers related to burn pit exposure, along with skin problems, asthma, bronchitis, respiratory, pulmonary, and cardiovascular problems, migraines, and other neurological conditions. These illnesses could have been prevented. The military typically used jet or diesel fuel to burn everything, creating far more pollution than high-temperature incinerators. But using incinerators would have cost more money. Waste disposal was handled by the military contractor Kellogg Brown & Root, or KBR, a subsidiary of Halliburton. Halliburton's CEO prior to 2001 was Dick Cheney. Cheney then became U.S. vice president and was a key architect of the invasions and occupations of Afghanistan and Iraq. KBR received no bid contracts to handle an array of logistics for the wars, including waste disposal. KBR chose cheap and dirty burn pits, maximizing profits. War is a racket, retired U.S. Marine Major General Smedley Butler wrote in 1935. Butler was a career Marine, admitting in a 1931 speech, "I spent most of my time being a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street and the bankers," Butler said. "I was a racketeer, a gangster for capitalism," he said. The close to $700 billion appropriated by the PACT Act for the next 10 years will help alleviate some suffering caused by Halliburton's war profiteering, but only for U.S. victims. It won't do a thing for the people of Iraq and Afghanistan.
Veterans saw acute short-term exposure to burn pits at peak health at the prime of their lives.
Again, that's Professor Kali Rabai, who recently returned from the heavily war-impacted Iraqi city of Fallujah.
Iraqis faced long-term diffuse exposure at all stages of the life course, so the health effects were varied and widespread. There is epidemiological evidence that living near U.S. bases in Iraq, and therefore near burn pits, increased the likelihood of giving birth to a child with a birth defect or of getting cancer. So those are some of the most acute long-term effects. Burn pits are not the biggest figure of environmental and health harm for Iraqis. They have also been facing military occupation, bombings, shootings, displacement, and layers of military incursion by different occupation forces since the U.S. invasion. And these things have all added up to collapse in public infrastructure that would be used to contend with the health effects of burn pits, poor overall health, and then, of course, damage conditions for farming and fishing.
Professor Kali Rubayi concluded,
there is one really great way to avoid war-related injury, which is to not go.
The scars of the U.S. invasions and occupations of Iraq and Afghanistan are deep, spanning decades. We'll never know how many millions were killed and injured. The United States bears responsibility and owes the survivors reparations, no less than has been pledged belatedly to U.S. veterans. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Renewable Weather Report. And each day we start the renewable weather with the price of fossil fuels in Greene County. The lowest price for a gallon of gas in Greene County, according to the Gas Buddy website, is Cumberland Farms Cairo for $4.39 a gallon. Then we take a look at the air quality forecast, and it's pretty good at 27 on Sunday. The National Weather Service in Albany predicts Sunday will be hot, mostly sunny, good for the local solar panels with a high of 87, wind from the west around 6 miles per hour spinning local windmills. There is a 60% chance of showers and thunderstorms during the day. They pop up here and there and may rain a lot in one place and not anything at all in another. Sunday night, it is a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly before 2 a.m. in the forecast. Partly cloudy skies the rest of the night with a low around 70. Monday, the forecast is much the same. There's a 40% chance of showers or thunderstorms. They're going to be in some places and not others, mainly after 2 p.m. Otherwise, it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 88 and a wind from the west around 5 miles per hour. Monday night, again, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms and cloudy skies and a low around 69. And then Tuesday, there's a 50% chance of rain. Thunderstorms also possible after 11 a.m. Otherwise, it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 84 and a low around 68. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered radio for open ears. On Monday, August 8th, tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the air at 90.7 FM, WGXC. Including at 10 a.m., you can hop on the Afrosonic Taxi. This week, listening in with Mayua Sykes, Muri Sangria, and Nedia Gangora, among others. Then Brandon Donegan is playing favorites with some of his favorite reggae songs at 11 a.m. live from the WGXC Hudson studio in the basement of the First Presbyterian Church on Warren Street. At noon, after the local news, it's time for the Deep Three show with music this week from Marlena Shaw, Gabriella Montero, and the Kronos Quartet, among others. Vital Weekly program at 2 p.m. has brand new music from around the world featured. This week, hear new tracks from Heather Frosch, Katie Porter, and Alessandro Gobibi. At 4 p.m., we are live from Western Massachusetts with Kieran Riley and the WGXC Afternoon Show on 90.7 FM, WGXC.
Tune in the Radio Art Hour, Saturdays at 3 p.m. on WGXE, a show where art is not just on the radio, but is the radio.
Oh, radio, radio. Uh-huh. Radio.
The Radio Art Hour draws from the Wavefarm Broadcast Radio Art Archive, an online resource that aims to identify, coalesce, and celebrate historical and contemporary international radio artworks made by artists around the world. Tune in the Radio Art Hour, Saturdays at 3 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM. 72.
On July 25th, Democrats Josh Riley and Jamie Chaney both spoke at a candidate forum for the New York 19 new congressional district. In Delhi, they spoke, and the special election they're running against each other in is on August 23rd. Here is one question asked to Democrats Jamie Chaney and Josh Riley.
So we're moving to gun control. In 2020, the most recent year for Pew Research data, 45,000 plus people died from gun-related injuries. Over 19,000 were gun murders, a 34% increase from the previous year, a 49% increase over 5 years, and a 75% increase over 10 years. Jamie, you write, we need comprehensive gun reform, including banning assault weapons, expanded background checks, red flag laws, and addressing ghost guns. Given recent gun legislation, what one or two items would you push for next, and how do you propose to bust through the resistance to enact gun reform?
To me, the absolute priority to push for next is an assault weapons ban and an increase of the minimum age to buy a weapon. These are absolute priorities. I've shared with many of you, if we've had the opportunity to meet in person, the story of driving my 8-year-old to school a few days after Texas and him saying to me from the back seat of the car, "Mommy, if this shooter comes to my classroom, should I try to climb out the window or should I hide in the bathroom? Oh, I forgot to turn off my video." We are traumatizing a generation in real time because we cannot push through these laws that 80% of Americans support. The way that I would work to push them through is by bringing those people to the table. This is my community. I know this community. Many, many people will say, I own a shotgun and I use it as a tool on my farm, and I'm truly terrified the day after an assault weapons ban is passed, my shotgun will be taken away as well. I can speak with credibility to this community to say, no, that's not what we're gonna do. I can speak as someone who uses a gun as a tool on the farm. I can speak as someone who knows the moderate Republicans who are ready to cross the line on rowing guns, and someone who knows the people that we need to win a district like this and be able to pass that assault weapon.
Thank you. Thank you, Jamie. Josh?
Thank you. So I served as a counsel on the Senate Judiciary Committee after the massacre at Sandy Hook, and I have to tell you, it was one of the hardest and most difficult things I've worked on. Number one, seeing so many grieving parents coming to Washington asking for something, anything, to be done to keep kids safe. And then seeing a complete failure and breakdown of our democracy when the NRA rolled in with tons of money and tons of lobbyists and shut everything down. We had a package of reforms at the time that some of which is now in pieces, has been enacted in the recent bipartisan compromise, but so much of it is still out there. Had over 90% of support from the American people and yet still failed. In what functioning democracy do we have something as simple as improving the background check system fail with 90% support? It's a democratic system where special interests like the NRA can roll into Washington and flood the place with money and drown out your voices. So in addition to a number of the policies we've talked about here, one that's a top priority for me is one that I worked on after Sandy Hook, which was improving the National Instant Criminal Background Check system. That's the system within the FBI that's actually responsible for processing background checks. Today, it's faulty for two reasons. Number one, we're not checking all of the things we need to be checking. And number two, for the things we are checking, we don't have all the records in the system. So both of those things need to be done, and they need to be done right away to do something meaningful about gun violence in this country.
Thank you. So we're moving on to climate change. You both cite that climate change poses an existential threat to our planet. How should Congress balance taking action to mitigate climate change with demands of economic growth when they conflict? How would you fight for climate change given the resistance from our own party? Please provide some examples.
I love this question because I just totally disagree with the premise of the question. It's a false choice to say we have to choose between saving the planet and economic growth and jobs. Not only is it a false choice, they're the same thing. One of the things I am most excited about with this campaign and being in Congress is the amazing opportunities in this district to create the jobs of the future fighting climate change. We are, I'm telling you, we are at an inflection point in this district where with just a little bit of a push and a nudge, we can, in a matter of years, be on the forefront of innovation in fighting climate change. Let me give you one specific example, and afterwards I can give you a bunch of others. There's some amazing technologies that are coming out of our SUNY system right now with respect to clean energy storage and advanced batteries so that we can save the sun when the sun's not shining, we can save the wind when the wind's not blowing. We're doing that right here in our SUNY system. All of that technology is coming out of our SUNY system. So how do you take that from a lab on a SUNY campus and get it out onto a factory floor? Well, you need investments, you need federal investments, and there's provisions in the new bipartisan infrastructure law designed specifically for this purpose. And so one of the things you should expect out of your representative is advocacy day in and day out with the relevant departments of jurisdiction for that program to bring that money home as capital investments so that we can take all of that clean energy storage out of the lab in the SUNY system and put it to work on the ground with real jobs here. There's tons of other examples across the district, and I'm telling you, we should be really excited about it. We should be really, really excited about the potential here.
Thank you, Josh. Jamie, same question.
On July 25th, Democrats Josh Riley and Jamie Chaney both spoke at a candidate forum for the New York 19 new congressional district. In Delhi, they spoke, and the special election they're running against each other in is on August 23rd. Here is one question asked to Democrats Jamie Chaney and Josh Riley.
Jamie, I'm going to hand this one to you. Do you believe there should be changes made to the Supreme Court? If so, identify the changes you would like to see and explain the steps that you would take to bring about those changes.
There's no question in my mind that this is an all-hands contact moment from Roe for putting the lives of generation of women in jeopardy in real time, to guns, we're putting our children's lives at risk every day, we're putting everyone's lives at risk every day simply existing in this country, to climate. Those last three decisions were heartbreaking. I do not think that the immediate answer should be expanding the I am concerned that what we're going to have happen in that case is that we're just going to increase the pendulum, and it's going to be expanded again by a Republican majority when that is possible. Rather, I think we need to look at addressing in every way possible, using the power of the executive branch, using the power of the legislative branch, and then frankly, and I bring this back to the way I described the healthcare system on the ground around Roe, making sure we're looking at the roots of the problem and funding the things that are important such that people don't end up in a situation where they need to exercise one of these rights. So to me, increasing the size of the court is a last resort. That said, I'm here for the future of our children, our community's children, all of our children, and we need to protect those rights. That's what it comes down to. We'll have to look at that as an option. I will ask us to look at the other branches first.
Let me just bring up also, what about term limits? Is that something you would consider?
I feel very, very strongly about term limits. I would love to consider it.
Thank you. Josh.
I'll pick up there. I think that's actually the best. So number one, something needs to be done because this court is wildly out of step with the American people. I understand, I'm a lawyer, I understand that the courts need to be insulated from the politics of the day. I get it. But there's something egregiously wrong when you have a Supreme Court in the matter of 72 hours telling us that guns have more rights than women, and by the way, let the climate burn. So something needs to be done about this. What I would propose and what I would support is having 18-year staggered terms. This is not radical at all. In fact, it has a ton of precedent. Most state court systems are currently structured this way. Most constitutional democracies around the world are structured this way. An 18-year term insulates you from politics. You can't run again after that, so there's no political influence on what you're doing. And what we'll do is we'll stagger the term so that every president, so that the vacancies come up such that every four-year presidential administration gets two judges. What that's going to do when it's staggered is have a court that always reflects the elections from the